All right. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining another episode of the B2B Uncut podcast. My name is Sawyer Frank. I'll be your host for today, and I'm joined by Stephen Javor, the head of digital customer experience at Schneider Electric. How are you doing today, Stephen?
Not too bad. Sawyer, how are you?
Oh, doing quite well. Thanks for asking. It's hard to complain when I live in beautiful, sunny Florida. But
yeah, absolutely.
Stephen, can you tell us a little bit about your role at Schneider Electric and what digital customer experience means in the context of your job title?
So I am the head of digital customer experience in Canada. I'm also part of the global team, though I'm transitioning from that role of the global link to our customer experience and commercial transformation team representing North America, Canada, and the United States. So in both these roles, I have the distinct responsibility of making sure that our global strategy and our local country strategies are aligned, and we're both thinking forward about the customer experience, making sure that we are being progressive and aligning with their expectations, but also obviously trying to exceed their expectations. And a lot of that means understanding, you know, what their issues are, what their problems are, and what our kind of solutions can we bring to bear that makes that experience a lot more efficient, a lot more friendly, and making sure we're able to help them convert and get them, let them do what they need to get done.
That's incredible. I mean, obviously we live in such a diverse world with so many different global markets that I'm sure you guys are tapping into. I think it'd be great for the audience to understand exactly what some of those markets are. I mean, I would think, being in Canada and managing Canada, North America, Asia, right, Europe, et cetera.
Yeah. So I've got a pretty extensive experience. I mean, I've been involved in digital since 1995. I've worked for a number of international companies. I joined Schneider in 2013, based out of Canada at the very beginning, but then joined the global team and moved to Germany and spent about 2.5 years in Germany, breaking open e-commerce in that market, before taking on the role of the North American oversight of e-commerce and distribution from the global perspective. And then I moved to Nashville for a few years and then came back to Canada. So I've got a really good understanding, or at least from my perspective, a fairly good understanding of how the markets are sort of different from a geographical standpoint. Now, Schneider as a company, we kind of are focused in sort of four different areas. One, the residential area, and we're focused on the B2B and the B2C market. We're a $40 billion company based out of Paris, France. You know, obviously available in 128 different countries. We have 150,000 employees. But our major markets that we do business in is in residential. So you may have a square deed breaker in your house. That's sort of us. And that's probably one of our more popular brands that you'd be aware of. But then we also are in the commercial segment. So we help electrify buildings, whether that be a multi-residential apartment building, or it could be as big as an airport or a university campus or a factory building. Then we get into the industrial side, where we actually work in electrifying the machines inside a factory. Contactors, push buttons, speed drives, you know, safety switches, things like that. And then we're also very big in secure power, and we help power. And this is where a lot of the attention has been coming lately with data centers. So we power data centers. So we're the company that basically electrifies your business from power source to plug in multiple different ways. And then on top of that, we have what we call the EcoStruxure AI system, which helps because all of these devices that manage electricity for you also creates data. And then we have this data structure and this AI structure called EcoStruxure Building, EcoStruxure Factory, EcoStruxure Machine. There's a number of different versions of it that allow you to manage your energy better and help be a bit more proactive and predictive about what's working and what needs, where you have opportunity to become more efficient. So we're considered to be the world's most sustainable company, Schneider Electric. We've won a few awards on that, and that's where we are continuing to, move forward in helping companies not only become more sustainable, but from the end user perspective, making sure that they're able to transact more effectively and efficiently through our partner networks.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you, Steve. That's a lot of diversity that we talked about in such a short period of time. And I'd like to drill down, especially as we look at your title and kind of what you're doing at Schneider Electric. How do you approach the challenge of managing customer experience in such a complex ecosystem? I mean, we're talking about services, products, global markets, different preferences. I mean, how do you go about managing that? It sounds like you've got a global team and you're, you know, obviously an instrumental part of that, understanding even just different cultures. But maybe you can talk a little bit about, you know, the differences that you're seeing based on customer demand and the, you know, how you guys are managing that customer experience.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to really, you know, and we've been really big on this, is really on a couple of things. One, it takes leadership. So we have a leadership structure where from the C-level on down, we've embraced the fact that, you know, the customer is really where, you know, all the insights of our success will lie. And so we do a lot of work on making sure that the alignment goes from the senior level right on down, that we need to focus on the customer experience and the quality side of that customer experience, whether it's quality in our products or quality in the interaction. And then it's data, right? And then it's making sure that we're getting access to all of the data that can inform us and give us some idea of where we want to go forward and where can we actually, you know, improve. And, you know, whether it's NSS data or monthly active users or actually working with our support teams to engage with the end users, to understand them, what they're doing, working through our sales teams, working through our customer service teams to really get that insight to make sure that we are where we need to be. And then thirdly, I think it's also, you know, being really on the forefront of where customer experience is going. And so we're one of the largest R&D companies in the world. We spend a lot of money, billions of dollars in R&D, as you need to in being in the electrical industry globally. And then we also focus on, you know, on where things are going. So we're very deep in AI. We've been in AI companies for 10 years with machine learning before generative sort of came in the last few years. And now we're really embracing generative AI and trying to see how that can help the customer experience in a number of different ways.
Yeah, I mean, off the heels of MDM, Modern Distribution Management Conference, probably the largest distribution-focused conference in North America, and then, of course, the NAD National Meeting, which is super relevant to your industry. You know, there was such a consistent topic on AI, it felt like e-commerce had almost taken a backseat. And obviously, the data conversation continues to persist because people understand with garbage data, you're only going to get a garbage result. But I'm curious from your perspective, I mean, you've definitely observed global differences in the adoption of AI. You know, what trends or behaviors have stood out to you across specific regions? I mean, is there a difference in terms of how Europe is using it versus North America, the customer preferences between the two regions? What are you seeing today?
Interestingly, I mean, you know, when you look at international Asia versus the Middle East, and then versus Europe versus North America, there are a lot of things that are the same. You know, people still want a great experience. That doesn't change no matter where you are. The way they pay for that experience does differ, and the methods that they go through and the kind of capabilities that they have electronically to do that. We're seeing the rise of marketplaces, especially in those jurisdictions where, you know, a lot of companies aren't really got the capabilities to develop their own sort of e-commerce type websites. But overlying that is what we're seeing is, you know, a lot of change happening with what AI is bringing to the world, especially from the shopping perspective and the choosing perspective, the selecting perspective. And we're sensing that AI is really becoming the search method of use. And as it becomes more integrated into customers' processes, it will become more and more the way that people choose to find out about their products and really work with us. So we're seeing companies that are being able to create these agents, which allow the customer to have, you know, profiles based on all the different distributors that they work on that'll look at availability, look at their project, understand what are the right products to order. And this saves a lot of time. At the end of the day, you know, most of the customers we work with are not really the end customers. They're the contractors. They're the engineering systems. They're the companies that work with end customers that win these kinds of engagements. And the way they win these engagements basically isn't on the price of the product, right? Whether they're buying our product or Siemens product, they're fairly similar. They've got similar sort of margins, but it's their expertise. It's their price. It's their time. And we're finding that the companies that are succeeding are the ones that are able to make more effective use of their time. And we're seeing that also through distribution. We're finding that those distributors that are really focusing on providing a better experience for the customers where they save time, where they can organize their jobs much more effectively, are the ones that are becoming more and more sticky. And those customers are staying with those distributors that can help them manage their business more than looking at whether that's the distributor that can give me the best price on a particular product.
Yeah. And I think that lends back to customer experience and service, right? I mean, if you're providing a service that allows them to not only find the products that they're looking for quickly, but also get them quickly, it's often a winning recipe as you compare yourself to a distributor that maybe haven't made investments in those areas that you've still got to pick up the phone or, you know.
But can you manage it for them? I mean, that's where the differentiation comes, right? Well, maybe I've got an order. I haven't won the order yet, but I can put it into your system and then I can manage that order there. I don't have to search around for emails or spreadsheets to see where it is. And then, you know, through our sales team, we win the order. Then I can then transition that particular quote into an order and manage the entire thing from your distribution website. That gives me a lot of power. That saves me a lot of time. That keeps me more organized. And, you know, when I look at platforms, you know, whether it's Shopify or whoever, it's like, are you providing that extra step? I mean, we all assume as a distributor, you're going to be able to get the product and get it to the customer within 2 days, you know, or one day if you can, that you'll have the availability, that you'll have maybe some expertise to be able to make sure that I'm getting the right product and maybe even other expertise to help me sort of design a system. But, you know, if you can help me manage the job, that's such a huge advantage to me. You know, and this is where I think we're going to start seeing AI playing a bit more of a role as these companies begin to develop these capabilities to help that customer experience that they have with their customers be more effective, be more efficient, be more on top of their game. And that, you know, it's all there for the taking. It just really matters who can really, you know, take advantage of it first.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I think there's a lot of investments, including from the e-commerce side and embedding AI in a customer portal. Right? Giving them the ability to search for products, to ask questions related to their customer account that's going to give relevant answers. And the other side of the coin, I think it's, you know, meeting the customer where they're at. You know, I found going from, you know, just coming off the heels of the NAD national meeting that there's plenty of customers out there that are still preferring to submit PDF POs, you know, I mean, their own POs, maybe, you know, writing on the side of a cardboard box in terms of, you know, something that they're loose on inventory with. And, you know, now we legitimately have the tools to help meet those customers where they're at today, transforming a PDF directly into an order that could be intervened by a customer service agent or a sales rep. So it's good to see that we're seeing some adoption of AI. Ironically, we're seeing it in areas that I think, like such as the AI smart order agent that we have, converting a PDF, I mean, PDFs and Excel ordering have existed for decades. We're just finally starting to see how AI is really transforming this, even though there's been players in the space for quite some time. Steven, I'm going to pivot here for a moment. I know you're at B2B Online Chicago. I know that this probably feels like months ago, at least it does for me, but I'm curious to just get your perspective. I mean, what were some of the great takeaways that you learned from that show? What were some of the valuable points that you'd love to communicate with an audience like ours on why you might invest in going to an event like that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the biggest part of that was just being interactive with all the different vendors and all the different sort of, you know, purveyors of B2B e-commerce. So really adding those conversations, sitting at those lunch tables and having dinners with different companies and just recognizing that, hey, we're all in this thing together. And as far behind or far ahead as that we may seem, we're actually, you know, you get a sense to gauge where you are and get to see some of the best practices that other people are doing. So it was great to hear from the different speakers. A lot of them, you know, very, very compelling in their messaging, which was, you know, fairly consistent with the idea that the world is changing. I mean, if I got anything out of that, is that what we're talking about in 2025 B2B online conference and what we'll be talking about in the 2028 B2B online conference will be two completely different things. You know, we are in a major transition right now and it is moving at breakneck speed. It's kind of funny because, you know, like I said, I've been involved in the game for quite some time. I remember going to my first internet conference back in 1996. You know, and it was sort of like the corner of a room in this one conference center. It was maybe 150 people there. We're all trying to figure out what the El Mozilla was and how does it work and everything else. And then, of course, you know, a year and a half, 2 years later, it was the entire conference building. And I remember last year, year and a half ago, I went to the big data and AI conference here in Toronto. And it was the same sort of thing. It was a quarter of the conference. It was a few people there, you know, and I said, yeah, I've seen this before. You know, and in 2 years, it'll be the entire conference hall. It'll just dominate the way things are going. So it was good this year to be in that conference and to hear those other people speaking and to see where they were testing and where things were going. And we weren't that far behind. And it is still early days. And it is exactly the time now to start investigating where you believe your business can benefit from the technology that's being, evolving on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I think I'll be careful when saying that it's never too late to invest, but I'm curious to get your thought, especially coming out of the NAD national meeting. I've found, several, let's call them small to mid-sized distributors that haven't made, strong digital investments to meet, the changing customer demand. What are your thoughts on what happens to those companies? Obviously, we're in a huge time of mergers and acquisitions. The number of companies even on site that were just announcing a recent acquisition or merger of some kind was pretty plentiful. But if I'm, say, a mid-sized distributor in the space that hasn't made an investment, what do you think the risk is to my business? And what would you suggest in terms of changing that?
Yeah, I mean, first you have to be able to, there are a lot of great firms out there that can give you an idea of where you are and how to get started. But you have to make the commitment. I mean, and it starts at the C-level, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it starts at the C-level. Do you want to change this company? And I've been in front of a lot of distributor CEOs that were, like, this is too much for me. I'm just going to retire. I'm waiting to hand off my company to my kids and maybe they'll be able to figure it out. Or they are positioning themselves for a buyout. At the end of the day, that's what's happening. I haven't seen any new wholesale distribution company come out of nowhere. I've seen a lot of online distribution companies evolve in the last 10 years, but I haven't seen a brick and mortar distributor come out as a new business over the last 10 years, and those guys are the biggest ones that are changing. Because if you're going to open a business now, you're going to be thinking online first. You're going to be thinking mobile first, right? So now those guys have started. Now they're thinking about how do they expand? They started online first. How do they expand? Well, now how do you expand, really? Well, now you have to start getting some brick and mortar, right? And so now they start buying into these areas and they're start picking up these companies that obviously have a great reputation. But the challenge that they have is the workforce is changing. We're going to have millennials and Gen Z. Millennials now are the top buyers and sellers online. They're the customer that you're going to. They were basically obviously born online. Now you've got Gen Z coming into it and Gen Alpha, right? Behind them, and they won't know life without AI, right?
Exactly.
Right. Their expectation is if I'm going to do business with you, you're going to be doing a lot more for me because you're going to have the capabilities to answer to what my expectation is. And that goes right back to customer experience. So I think these companies that haven't started their digital journey, they're going to miss the boat because their customers are going to have high expectations that they're going to be able to integrate with them using the tools that they're used to using on a day-to-day basis. And if you haven't got it, then you're really going to have to start moving fast or prepare yourself for an acquisition.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think the stat is over 70% of the buying force with purchasing power is now in the millennial or Gen Z demographic, which is wild, right? I mean, you can almost count the baby boomers out in terms of, the folks that are making those.
Yeah, and that's a challenge for our industry with the trades, needing more people to get into it. And we've seen more countries making that investment to get more people into the trades. I mean, AI isn't going to take over the trade area anytime soon. We haven't got those robots yet, but that is where there's going to be lots of opportunity. And we're trying to do as much as we can. We're working very closely with universities. We're working very closely with colleges. We're trying to make sure that we're investing in those areas where we believe that the next generation of tradesmen are going to come from. And
that's great. I mean, that was definitely a huge topic at both recent NAD meetings that I went to. I know it's a concern because obviously the number of folks retiring with trade skills far outweigh those that are actually coming in a certified fashion. So nevertheless, I think there's still a need to, meet the varying buying demands that these new buyers have and, obviously open more channels because I think there's tons of statistics out there that show that these buyers also prefer to do research on their own, which obviously
it comes back to time. They don't want to waste their time. They don't want to wait on the phone trying to get a hold of someone that's going to give them. But they do want that. They do want that. We find that Gen Z typically wants to have some direction. They actually are one of the more people that are reaching out for more information that want to be taught the right way. What are the shortcuts? How do I do this safely and economically? And that's where they've found that, hey, look, AI is being able to give me a lot of this information already. Now I
Yeah.
You can test it, right?
Yeah, quicker and in a better efficient manner. I mean, a lot of these working folks actually grew up on YouTube to a certain degree. So it totally makes sense. During our last conversation, we talked a little bit about marketplace. You know, would love to just get your thoughts on, you know, how marketplace can play a role in this competitive market between, you know, distributors and, you know, obviously manufacturers having a say or a stand in terms of how they develop the future of supply chain within this industry. I'm curious to know how, you know, Schneider is making investments in the marketplace field today.
Well, we started off roughly about 10 years ago with sort of a mandate to figure out how do we sell directly to customers. You know, we were going to develop, you know, we were very, very strongly committed to our distribution channel, but we wanted to understand e-commerce. We thought maybe we should, you know, figure out how to do that ourselves. That'll help us with understanding how we work through distribution. And we did that in certain geographies where especially our brand was not, you know, the top brand because these countries had other incumbents in that area. We started saying, well, we're not really getting a lot of love from those distributors. Let's open up a D2C shop. And we did that and we recognized, oh my God, this is really hard. This is really tough. And it's not easy. And there was too much channel conflict. And we said, this really wasn't part of our strategy. And so we went back and we relooked at the strategy and we said, you know, we're not going to go direct to consumer. What we want to do is really pull our support for our distribution partners. And so we developed a strategy that talked about, let's develop marketplaces. Because we know that a lot of companies, a lot of customers are coming to Schneider.com directly. And we don't want to just leave them, you know, going back out to Google to actually find the products. We want to actually deliver. So we developed marketplaces in certain geographies that enabled our distribution community to participate and then sort of close the loop that way. It's still very early days. We've been very successful in piloting this in India and Indonesia and Thailand and those countries. We're now bringing it into North America. We're bringing it into Europe. But again, it's a marketplace methodology where, you know, we want to be able to manage that customer experience, make sure that they are able to find the products that they need, but enabling our distributors to be forefront of the ones that they're going to buy it from. But we're completely dedicated to making sure that they're successful. So we're looking at both sides of this. The distribution side, making sure they're successful by producing the marketplace and the tools that they can enter in that marketplace, but also the customers that are coming to us, make sure that they have a successful experience.
Yeah, I think it's a great example of, you know, the varying customer experience needs in specific regions and how you handle those preferences by regions. It might not even be preference. It might just be how business is conducted. But love the fact that you're using the strength of Schneider's name to, you know, not only benefit your bottom line, but benefit, you know, the distributor's bottom line with the customer at the forefront, right? Understanding how the customer needs to find specific products and at what pricing.
Yeah. In some geographies, I mean, some of these our distributors don't have their own websites.
Yeah.
Right. So we're kind of enabling them to be relevant in where other customers are liking to shop and buy.
So yeah, it's so cool. I mean, this is obviously something we recognize launching marketplace capabilities in 2022. Obviously, there's always a component of cart and being able to select those products and put them in your shopping cart or carts. But, you know, there's also this thought around, you know, being a true third-party marketplace and having those vendor management capabilities to support, you know, the third party that could also, you know, help drive your sales.
Yeah.
So I'd love to just, you know, before we wrap up here, I'd love to just ask a little bit about AI. And I think this could be a huge benefit for, you know, the audience that tunes in. You know, oftentimes a lot of manufacturers and distributors are saying, you know, where do I start? What can we learn from this $40 billion business, global entity, in terms of, you know, how they're using AI today to, you know, drive internal efficiency and better customer satisfaction? I know we talked a little bit about, you know, search, obviously being a big one, but from your perspective, what are some of the other AI tools? And feel free to drop names specifically if you're comfortable in areas that have helped the business.
I mean, we have a global mandate that all employees of Schneider Electric have to have some degree of AI competency. We've launched that as a program. And I'm always impressed that Schneider does these things, that they recognize the fact that you need to have a start somewhere. And we're a Microsoft company. So, you know, we're a co-pilot internal, and we're slowly developing co-pilot. So the first thing you need to do is just being able to understand how to work with an AI chat model, whether you're going to work with Copilot or ChatGPT or Google's version, you know, you need to understand how to just do some basic prompting, how it works. And I think, you know, this can start naturally as you just use, you know, AI to be your search component that you use on a day-to-day basis, as opposed to just sort of going off the Google. And you're getting that anyhow. But, you know, what we're saying to all of our employees that, you know, start there, get some basic competency and understanding prompting, right? Understand also the limitations that you have with AI. It's not perfect, right? There are mistakes that it makes. You know, you have to double check on what it's doing. We don't allow any of our employees right now to use very highly confidential information when we're working with AI. But once you understand how to do prompting, then you understand how to do things like, you know, do customer research. If you're going to be going to in front of a customer, being able to use AI to figure out a little bit more about that customer, what their preferences are, where do they buy, what have they bought in the future, where their business, what, you know, give me some quick updates on how their business operates. So it's through these sort of iterations that you then begin to understand what agentic AI is, which is then how you can create these sort of agents to do specific tasks, right? And you can create projects. And I think for us, we've been doing a lot of experimenting outside of Schneider with OpenAI and that have these, you know, different agentic capabilities. We're doing some of that stuff in with our Salesforce internally, but we're beginning to explore. And that's, you know, the big thing is you can't stand still. Start exploring, take a look at the different solutions out there. Perplexity is doing some wonderful things with e-commerce. We're seeing, you know, platforms embracing AI like Shopify, and I'm sure, you know, Oro is the same way, right? So if the world's not standing still and you are, that's a sign, right? So you need to start moving in towards this direction.
Absolutely. And, you know, just staying on the topic of AI for a moment, I mean, are there any specific tools or features that you're providing to your customers for value? I feel like, you know, in my recent conversation at the show, there's been a lot of adoption internally.
Yeah.
In terms of how we help our internal employees get ahead further or...
Typically, internally, as you say, you know, so people are using the write better emails to do some analysis on spreadsheets that they're getting and things like that and create better presentations. Externally, you know, it usually starts out with a chatbot. You know, you'll usually start off with doing something with your support team and trying to get that interface that allows them to find access to content a bit easier when you're a customer coming in and being able to chat with an AI trained chatbot that's an expert in all your products. That's usually where it starts. And then we'll see how that evolves. I mean, the biggest challenge, like you said before in the beginning of your conversation, garbage in, garbage out. Our challenge is making sure that we have the right data that's going to be available, that's going to be used by these different AI models and libraries so that when people are using Google or Perplexity or, you know, Copilot or whatever to do their research about, you know, how they're going to configure their own, you know, electrical system, that our content is been read and understood by the AI library and we've become a part of that solution set. So that means we have to really think about how do we, you know, organize our data in a proper way that it's consumable by AI, that it's done in bullet points, that it's short, and then there's some, you know, some larger background information if they want to dive in deeper, you know, and that's the challenge. We're seeing SEO kind of evolve into more thematic pieces where you need to really be the thought leader and create that kind of content to really get the attention of AI. So, you know, it's very complex and we're trying to figure it out slowly but surely.
Yeah, that's cool. I love to see the investment and hear about it as well. Mm-hmm. Last question for you, Stephen. Schneider Electric, you guys are aiming to be the world's most sustainable company. I think you mentioned that at the top of our call here. How does digital strategy contribute to that vision? I mean, particularly in terms of customer interaction and product choice. I mean, just overall, I'd love to understand, like, how do you feel digital strategy contributes to becoming the most sustainable company?
Yeah, well, I mean, we obviously make sure, you know, it's been a huge focus. Digitization and sustainability are the two pillars that the company's strategy has been based upon. And we recognize that there's a relationship between the two. And, you know, and we believe that, you know, the more we can digitize the experience, the better that we can also work on the sustainability of that experience as well. So what we're seeing is that a lot of companies are looking at sustainability as an important, you know, part of their strategy. And so we're making sure that they're getting all that information and that content available to them to make the right choices, to understand how they can become a more sustainable company, right? And what products can they choose to help them make more sustainable, or what programs can they align with? Like I talked before, our EcoStruxure program, which will help you figure out how to become more sustainable, how to save money and how to save energy, right? It's not just about, you know, the being a better planet, but it's actually better in your finance. Your finance people become happier if you're spending less money on energy and you're making the most use of it. So we're looking at both those combinations and understanding that, that, you know, the other side of it is that AI is expensive from an energy standpoint. Right. And so that's why a lot of companies that are developing, you know, these data centers are talking to us and saying, hey, you're the leader in sustainability. And you also develop, these data systems for these data platforms. Please help us figure out how to become a more sustainable, you know, data center.
Yeah, it's incredible. Which, man, that topic has been hotter than COVID at these conferences, at these electrical conferences. It's certainly taking a lot of the focus and obviously a lot of demand from the workforce as well. Stephen, I'd like to thank you for joining us. Just final thought. I mean, what advice would you give other digital leaders looking to kind of overhaul their platforms or experience platforms just in a sustainable and globally mindful way?
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to today's practices. It's really about understanding your sea level, right? Oh, and working with that level. I mean, you need to have buy-in at the very top to understand about, you know, where you're going forward and make sure you're aligning with them or at least educating them on what the possibilities are. You know, in my years and years of experience, you know, aligning the right CIO and the CEO and the CDO, CFO for, you know, is hugely important when you're trying to get buy-in to make sure that you're moving in concert in the right direction with everybody and you understand the company's goals, because there's so much opportunity out there right now. And some of it's scary and some of it's fun. But you need to have that alignment with your top team to make sure that you're all going in the same direction.
Cool. Stephen, very insightful conversation today. Again, thank you so much for joining the B2B Uncut podcast. Sure. Have an excellent day.
Thanks, Sawyer.
This episode is brought to you by Oro, a leading innovator and provider of customer-driven, powerful and connected open source software for B2B digital transformation. Oro seeks to build long-term, trustful relationships with its customers, integrators, developers, and technology partners by empowering people with the best tools to digitalize their business. Find out more at oroinc.com. That's OROINC.com. Thank you for listening to B2B Commerce Uncut, a journey through change, powered by Oro. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode.